It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, while many of the top 40 labor markets have regained jobs lost since the beginning of the pandemic, the seven-county Pittsburgh region still has about 60,000 fewer people employed than in March 2020. Why are we lagging behind? Well, we're going to put that question and many others to regional economist Chris Bream from the University of Pittsburgh Center for Social and Urban Research. Welcome back to the Confluence, Chris.
Good morning.
Chris, as you do your deep dive into the numbers, are you surprised by anything that you see?
Well, I mean, surprised, concerned. It clearly is the case that we're not sort of behaving the way many other large metro regions are in terms of coming back from COVID. There's been this tremendous shock to the national labor market, to a lot of regions, and most places are sort of inching back. The national labor market has sort of creeped back to the employment levels just before COVID, pretty much, but that's not our story. We are really not sort of inching back the way you would want to see.
Are there any markets maybe similarly sized that are struggling like Pittsburgh or not?
There are places that are struggling, but really sort of if you sort of benchmark against large metro areas, we are really near the bottom. And so, employment levels here have been seasonally adjusted employment levels in the region have been just flat for the last year. And really the size of the labor force overall, not just employed, but the folks out there employed or looking for work has the drop from COVID has not, we're sort of at the COVID lows, the COVID nadir, and that's really sort of troubling. We're not sort of inching back at all.
You said, you used the term flat over the last year. Is that any surprise? Because, you know, more people were vaccinated and boosted and businesses were trying to open up more.
So, it is strange that it's so flat. Now, we have some population and some other economic trends that sort of might keep us from sort of performing as well as many other areas, but just the fact that it's been completely flat implies there's probably a lot of things going on. That top line number probably hides a lot of different factors, but they're balancing out is what it's telling us. You know, different sectors are doing, some are doing better, some are doing worse. We're probably not bringing in the workers we need to fill the jobs that are here. That's a challenge everywhere, but it seems to be a particular challenge here at the moment.
Do you think this is an all pandemic related situation where there's signals before the pandemic even hit?
So this is a region that has some demographic challenges. We're an older region. In fact, we weren't sort of jumping out of the crowd in a sense, you know, before the pandemic. That's certainly true. And that's not what I'm focusing on. It's just that at least we sort of were tracking national trends in a broad sense, but we're trailing a little farther behind as we go forward.
So the region slow to rebound. This has happened before. I'm thinking of the 2008-2009 recession. Is the same thing happening here 13 years later?
You know, it's Pittsburgh has a strong memory of recessions, right? If some of us older folks go back far enough, right? The last memory many people have of a major recession is that period you said. The media has called it the Great Recession. And that was a unique time in Pittsburgh because we actually fared much better than many other regions through that recession. So there wasn't actually the need for the rebound. We actually were doing pretty well relative to other regions. I think if you go back further, maybe what you're saying is true. But we're now talking sort of a generational. It's been a generation since the recession of the dot-com bust, if you remember, or the multiple recessions of the 80s.
Mm-hmm. What should we learn from that time? Is there any lesson that can be applicable to now?
Well, it's all about there are national trends and national issues. You know, COVID has impacted everyone with challenges in the labor force. But at the end of the day, a lot of the labor market is dependent on this regional competition. You know, right? So it's how we're doing compared to other regions, because we're really sort of fighting for workers. People are moving here. People are being recruited to go elsewhere. And that's sort of, we were doing well 10 years ago because the job demand here brought folks here. We maybe even saw some population gains a decade ago that sort of came out only in the recent census numbers. But that's where we're at right now, in that the labor market tightness is everywhere. So folks who might see job opportunities in Pittsburgh are also seeing them elsewhere. They're not seeing the same incentives to move here that were there. And that's the fundamental way I sort of hope people look at sort of these regional competition issues, the regional labor market. It's a competition for workers.
Mm-hmm. So we've been looking at the what, the numbers being down, and the where here, the Pittsburgh labor market. Let's get a little bit more into why. Why is the Pittsburgh region still thousands and thousands short of where we were just a little more than 2 years ago?
So COVID's had this tremendous impact everywhere. I won't focus on that. I mean, we know people had tremendous difficulties with childcare, tremendous difficulty with jobs that required you to be in person. Different types of jobs were able to quickly shift to being remote work. Others were not. But this question of Pittsburgh, I there's not one answer. That's the first thing I want to say is, clearly, we are an older workforce. There was clearly an impact of early retirements nationally because of COVID. We probably are more impacted by that. I do think we were impacted by the scale of over the last 2 years, maybe not right now, but over the last 2 years of student employment, in that we have a lot of college students here. Those folks weren't literally here through much of COVID. They were also here remotely. They couldn't physically work here if they weren't here, and all of those jobs they were filling in leisure and hospitality were jobs that were physically here. And then there's a tremendous bunch of other reasons. People have made just significant shifts in their workforce choices, employment choices. And then at the bottom line, at the end of the day, I think it comes down to competition, in that a lot of folks, I think we've got a depressed level of workers moving into the region because the tremendous opportunities elsewhere. Unemployment here is about 5% right now. That's lower than it's been for the region than average over the last decade. But the national unemployment is much lower, 3.6%. So these workers are finding opportunities elsewhere.
Can you go deep into the numbers to see if companies that maybe are able to offer hybrid are doing better in being able to attract or hold on to their employees?
So I don't have that answer. It's clearly true that different sectors, different industries were able to quickly shift to remote work, and that impacted different workers. Financial services, our banks, big banks downtown in particular, a lot of employment, they quickly and were able to shift to remote work and didn't see the same job losses as in jobs significantly impacted, leisure and hospitality and other restaurants, for example, hotels. Lots more work to do to figure out exactly, you know, who's keeping their workers and who are losing them.
So the labor force has not rebounded. Again, reminding people that's the people who are employed and people who are actively seeking work. Why is that the labor force hasn't rebounded? Is it a lot of people retired or what? Is it even beyond that?
So I think, again, it's, as I was saying a second ago, lots of different reasons. Early retirement from their labor force is something I think is happening nationally because of COVID. The depressed workers, I said, who were students, I think people have difficulty with, we talk about child care, you know, people weren't able to sort of continue working and take care of their children. But also here in town, elder care, a lot of folks have are significant care issues for other members of their family. All these things that are keeping people out of the labor force. And then, again, as I go back to, I think our labor force is more and more impacted by the scale of our ability to attract workers from elsewhere, because they're people who might have normally moved here in past years are seeing these tremendous opportunities elsewhere.
So employers in the region are sometimes competing against one another, but they're also competing against employers in other states?
Yeah, it's a national labor market. The American labor force is very mobile. A lot of folks, the most common reason people move, the working age population moves, is for economic reasons, people looking for a job or have a job. And so that's if they're not moving here, it's the churn. People move in, people move out. That's normal. And if they're not moving here for jobs, you're going to start to see that in the top line numbers. That's where we're at, I think.
Finally, Chris, talked about haven't recovered the number of people who are employed, and the labor force is still down. You seeing any positive signs from the numbers?
I think we have these top line numbers don't necessarily give the whole picture. I think we are being very competitive in many different sectors. There are sort of challenges in others, and it kind of averages out to these top line numbers. But I think Pittsburgh, certain industries, certain workers are highly competitive. And we probably shouldn't obsess on these top line numbers completely. They're very important, but they're not the whole story of what's going on.
Chris Bream is a regional economist with the University of Pittsburgh Center for Social and Urban Research. Chris, thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Today is the deadline to apply for a mail-in or absentee ballot for the May 17th primary election. Voters across the state will choose their party nominees who, come November, might shape policy across Pennsylvania or our country, with races for a U.S. Senate seat, 17 U.S. House seats, the governor's office, as well as the entire Pennsylvania House and half of the state Senate. But before we can know who will win the nomination for the general election, we need the actual election. And for the actual election, we turn to Allegheny County Elections Division Manager David Voy. David, welcome back to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
David, roughly, how many mail-in ballot applications has your office seen so far?
Today, we should surpass 125,000.
And that's what you have, and so you're projecting those last-minute applications coming in that would be included in that number that you just mentioned?
Yes. We were at 118,000 yesterday afternoon, and we should reach between 100 and 125,000 today.
Will all the polling places be open in the county? You've worked hard to get them open, you know, the last elections, because they were limited, let's face it, during the really bad days of the pandemic. Are all polling places going to be open across the county a week from today?
Yes. Allegheny County has 1,323 polling locations. It's approximately 950 different locations. They will all be open on election morning.
Mm-hmm. Late last month, WESA's Lucy Perkins spoke with Jessica Garofalo, the county's director of administrative services. She told WESA the county wasn't sending all the mail-in ballots out at once.
We're doing a staggered mailing, so we're not going to send everything out all at once. So we'll do, you know, a few now, a few probably Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So I would like to think by early next week.
All right, David, so with today's application deadline, are you now sending them out as soon as you get them in?
So she is absolutely correct. As of last Wednesday, you know, we sent a file of 100,000 to our mailing vendor, and I believe he was sending out between 15 and 20,000 per day. But as of right now, everything is out except for what was applied for yesterday.
Okay. WESA also reported at the end of April, the county was still short about 2,000 people to work at the polls. All right. 1 week from today, are you still short? How many do you need?
We are short. Like I said, 1,323 polling locations, a perfect world, we would have five workers at each location. And so you're looking at 6,600 people that open up our polling place on election day. And honestly, I mean, we can't run an election without these folks. Currently, we have a little over 5,800 scheduled. Now, with mail-in voting and less people at the polls, we can get by with three or four at a polling location, depending on how many registered voters. But we would like to have the full complement of five.
Can people still apply to be a poll worker?
Yes.
What kind of training is needed for that?
We do offer in-person training and we do offer online training. Each takes approximately 2 hours.
We mentioned the deadline for applying for a mail-in ballot. Is there a deadline to become or to apply to be a poll worker?
Not necessarily. There's oftentimes on election morning, we're still looking for places. Somebody doesn't show up or somebody's late. We're looking for fill-ins.
And any particular requirements to be a poll worker?
You must be 18 years of age and a registered voter.
That's it?
Yep.
Okay. So what about ballot sorting and counting? Does your office have enough people for that?
Yes. We are permitted to start counting the ballots 7 a.m. on election morning. And what we do is we bring county employees from other offices over, and obviously they're sworn in, and we start opening and sorting at 7 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Around April 20th, you said that based on the number of mail-in ballots in the county at that time, that by the time the polls close at 8 p.m. next Tuesday, you expect almost all the mail-in ballots would be ready to enter and to be counted. Is that still the case?
Yeah, after a full day of counting, as soon as the polls close or shortly after 8, we will upload the results as we have them counted from all the mail-in and absentee ballots. And I suspect at that time it will be the majority of them.
Would you briefly explain that process? I've been there when you did a demonstration. So at 7 a.m., you are officially allowed to start pre-canvassing, the opening of the mail-in ballots. Would you briefly explain what happens then, and then what happens at 8 o'clock when the polls close?
So at 7 a.m. when we start opening the outer envelopes, that's the declaration envelope. That is where the voter signs and dates. We're permitted to start opening those. So what we do is inside that is a secrecy envelope. We extract all the secrecy envelopes. All right. So now you can no longer attach a ballot to a voter. So your vote is still secret. Then we go back through and open up those 100,000 secrecy envelopes, extract the ballot, flatten them out, backfold them, get them as flat as we can. And then we have 10 high-speed scanners at our warehouse where we have operators sitting and scanning those ballots all day long.
Now, do you expect to be able to do that? You mentioned that you expected to be able to do it, be ready to go to enter the data at 8 o'clock. Is that because there might be fewer mail-in ballots, or you've just gotten more used to this mail-in system and how you proceed along?
I think it's a combination of both. I think we've gotten better at counting them. But if you remember back in the presidential, we had 400,000. So I mean, if you're looking at four times the amount, and it took us a couple of days to count. But if we have 120,000 returned, which I don't believe everyone will be returned, I think we will be done by 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm.
Some election officials have asked, especially the wake of the 2020 election with so many mail-in ballots, they've asked for pre-canvassing of mail-in ballots maybe a couple of days before Election Day. Do you advocate for that?
I do. There's a deadline at 5 o'clock, Friday at 5 p.m. if you want to challenge somebody's right to vote. And once that passes, I believe we should be able to start opening and counting. Mm-hmm.
So, David, for people who might be voting for the very first time in person, what should people keep in mind?
The polls will be open at 7 a.m. There shouldn't be that long of lines with mail-in voting. I think it should be a relatively quiet day. Mm-hmm.
And I believe it was Friday after the November 2020 election that we had the results. When do you expect them for this primary election?
I would hope by midnight.
Midnight on election night.
Yes, sir.
All right. David Voy is the County Elections Division Manager for Allegheny County. David, thanks so much for your time today.
Kevin, thank you for having me today.
It's The Confluence. I'm Kevin Gavin. Today's labor market has employers recruiting furiously for workers. And 90.5 WESA's On Lee Herring reports there's evidence that businesses across the country have opened up positions to people whose criminal pasts once might have shut them out of a job.
Brandy White lives just outside Pittsburgh, and when she returned last summer from 7 years in prison, she figured she'd be locked out of her previous career in patient care. It was painful to think about.
My passion is to help people, and I didn't think it was ever possible again.
Instead, White got a job on a chocolate factory assembly line that left her feeling pretty empty. Eventually, she enrolled in a job training program to see if she could find fulfilling work elsewhere. She was surprised when the program staff told her UPMC was looking for employees just like her.
And I said, listen, do they know about my drug charge? And they had to keep reassuring me, Brandy, they know, because it just didn't seem real.
White started as a patient care technician at UPMC's Mercy Hospital last month. Dan Lavallee of UPMC says her timing couldn't have been better.
We have 14,000 unfilled positions at the current moment that we're trying to recruit for, so we need to get creative. You know, and for us, it's about making sure that people who have barriers to work can see a future with us.
Lavallee leads an effort at UPMC Health Plan to support job seekers who face obstacles such as past convictions. The initiative started the year before the pandemic began, but given the current labor crunch, other employers are also seeking out people with records. Amy Kroll has witnessed this shift from inside the Allegheny County Jail, where she runs reentry services. She remembers getting a call last summer from a business owner.
I was like, do you know you're calling Allegheny County Jail? He kind of chuckled and said, yes, I do, but I have multiple vacancies and you have young men and young women down there and I need to fill these vacancies.
Kroll says she soon got similar requests from manufacturing plants, construction firms, and restaurants. And there are signs it's a national trend. The job site Indeed keeps track of postings that don't require applicants to report past involvement with the justice system, at least on their initial screen. While they still account for a small share of all postings, there's a third more today than in 2019.
We've actually had job candidates on our site apply for three jobs, get two offers, and then be able to choose between one or the other. And I think that's a dynamic that probably never existed before for formerly incarcerated job seekers.
Harley Blakeman leads Honest Jobs, an online platform for applicants with criminal records. He and other reentry service providers say their clients are not just getting better pay and benefits, but they also have a better chance of landing jobs where they can see a future for themselves. In Pittsburgh, Dejon Arnett just started as a prep cook at the Oakland restaurant, The Porch. He says he wanted to become a chef even before he was released from prison last fall.
And I plan to be all over this kitchen, so this is a real big step for me.
He says it makes a difference to have a job he's excited about.
That's one thing that's key with me. If I really enjoy where I'm at, you ain't never got to worry about me. So that was probably one problem I had when I was about 18, 19. I didn't really get the big picture.
Amy Kroll at the Allegheny County Jail says her clients also need to think ahead for things beyond their control.
We do tell our guys, men and women, this is an opportunity. It may not last forever, because this job market may start to shrink. And we find people are taking that very serious.
That's promising, she says, because if formerly incarcerated people can prove themselves today, employers might be willing to give them more of a chance after the labor market cools. Anlie Herring, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time, we talk about the partnership between the Pittsburgh Opera and the National Opera House. Thanks to our team, Nick Konopka, Laura Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.